From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is made in a college classroom with a question. Who is teaching this course? And I don't mean the name of the professor. I mean, is this person a tenured professor or tenure track or an adjunct? Or maybe you use a different term, part-time, contingent, adjunct, non-tenure track. We're talking about the difference between full-time professors and part-time. And there are various studies that demonstrate that adjunct professors now comprise at least half of all college and university faculty. Only about 30% of tenured and full-time, City newspaper now citing research showing that about 25% of new college hires are tenure track positions. Think about that. 3 out of 4 new college hires are not for tenure track positions. And the average adjunct makes about $3,000 per course. Want to make a living on that money? Think of an adjunct who teaches 6 courses per semester, 3 times a year in semesters, sometimes multiple campuses driving long distances in between. I know adjuncts doing that today. 3 semesters per year, that's an income of $54,000, but no benefits, spotty office hours, no paid time off. Adjunct faculty at Nazareth College are considering unionizing in an effort to raise their pay and benefits to improve what they can offer students. Nazareth College adjuncts teach about 1/3 of all NAS credit hours, according to Nazareth College, and this move toward unionization is becoming more common. It has happened at several dozen schools in the past 5 years across the country. Now, opponents of unionization for adjuncts say they're concerned that this could handcuff the creativity of universities. Colleges like Nazareth occasionally bring in adjunct professors to teach specialty courses, and in the effort of full disclosure, I can tell you that I've taught 1 college course in my life. It was at Nazareth as an adjunct in the communications department. And opponents of unionization say these kinds of arrangements could shrink the pool of candidates to teach specialty courses. I do not take a position on unionization as the host of this program. I do not currently teach as an adjunct. I've done it one time and it was at NAS. So there you go. Let's talk about it this hour, and there's a lot to discuss, and I want to welcome our guests. Colleen Wolfe is in studio with us, an adjunct lecturer in music at Nazareth College. Colleen, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Jake Allen is an organizer for SEIU Faculty Forward at Nazareth College. Jake, welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Also with us is Pat Domeretz, who's a labor relations specialist with NICET, an adjunct at Cornell. Is that right?
Adjunct at Cornell.
And what do you teach at Cornell?
Collective bargaining and union organizing.
And I'm selling your resume short a little bit here. I'm truncating a little bit, Pat, but thank you for being here. I appreciate taking the time. And Paul Simonelli is here, who is a Second Amendment expert, an attorney at Simonelli & Simonelli, and an adjunct professor in the paralegal department at MCC. For how long, Paul?
Well, actually, in the Homeland Security.
Homeland Security.
Yeah, management department. That's correct.
Okay. And for how long have
Since,
you been doing
it? Since 2013.
Okay. Thanks for being back on the program, Paul.
Thank you.
So we know we're going to hear a lot from our listeners this hour, and you can do that. You can call the program or you can email if you want to share your experiences. This discussion in this particular case is going to focus on what's going on at NAS. But the broad question is, with adjuncts on every campus, because this is becoming really the majority just about everywhere. We can also tell you that we reached out to Nazareth College, and they told us that they would not provide a member of the administration for the program live today, but they did send a lengthy statement in which they contend they are not anti-union. I can tell you that reading the statement, it sounds pretty anti-union, but I don't think that they would appreciate me saying that. Let me just go ahead and read some of what they're saying. Part of their contention is they're concerned that adjuncts are being pressured. So let me go ahead and read the statement from President Don Braveman, expressing 4 key points to the campus community regarding unionization at Nazareth. Number 1, Nazareth is committed to sustaining our positive and collaborative culture in service to our students and community. Number 2, Nazareth supports the right of part-time faculty members to have their voices heard and to decide without pressure whether or not they want outside union representation. Number 3, Nazareth will provide thorough and factual information about unionization to part-time faculty members so they can make an informed decision about their future. And number 4, Nazareth hopes that every part-time faculty member will vote in the election. And again, it's a lengthy statement. We'll post it. But Nazareth stressing to us that they don't want anyone pressured, that they are hearing that that there has been. And in fact, one other point that I will read here is they say, quote, "We have not engaged in any pressure tactics. We have not required part-time faculty members to attend meetings. We have not made any promises or any threats. We have not met privately with part-time faculty members. We have not engaged in any anti-union communications. Indeed, every communication we have issued is publicly available on the website. We invited the union to make a similar commitment to elections that are free of pressure, and instead the union has attempted to pressure individuals through such tactics as going to their homes, calling them at their homes, and stopping them on campus." End quote. I wish I could ask President Braverman. It sounds like what the union's doing is just trying to educate people, like when you stop somebody on a campus. But anyway, that is part of the statement from Nazareth College. And they hope everyone votes, and they want no pressure. So let me start with Colleen Wolfe. What do you make of that statement, and how do you feel about the unionization effort?
Well, it sounds pretty much like all of the communications that have been issued by the college since we started this. Personally, I take issue with the charge that the union is pressuring. I've been doing a lot of this work. I've been going around campus and meeting professors after their class and trying to talk to them. And that's really all it is. I introduce myself and I say, hi, I'm Colleen and I'm an adjunct from the music department. And I don't know if you've heard, but we're talking about coming together and possibly forming a union. Would you like to have a conversation about that? And some people say, yeah, sure. And some people say, no, I'm really not interested. And I walk away. I mean, I don't quite see how that's pressuring someone. I've offered to, you know, would you like me to, I can email you some material if you'd like. Oh, yeah, that would be great. And I do it. And if they say, no, I'm really not interested, well, I leave them alone. I do what people ask me to do. These are my colleagues and I respect them as my colleagues. I don't consider myself to be particularly intimidating or a pressuring sort of person. It's just a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading the statement when they say that such pressuring tactics as calling them at their homes.
I've done that. I've called people at their home.
You've called people.
And,
okay.
Yeah, and a lot of the times, you know, people don't answer or they do answer and I identify myself and I say, hi, I'm Colleen and I'm from the music department at Nazareth and I'm a fellow adjunct and you may have heard we're talking about unionizing. Can we talk about that? And they either say, sure, tell me about it. Or they say, yeah, I've heard about it and I'm just not interested. And I say, okay, thank you for your time. And we hang up. And so I don't think that's invasive. I'm not quite sure how people would feel that it was.
Sure. And I tend to, I mean, this is a case where I think that what you're saying is logical here. I mean, I wish Don Braverman were on the program, and he's been on the program a lot, and Nazareth has been super accessible. I will just say, I think that part of the statement's a little strange. I mean, it sounds like you're trying to do is educate people on your position. But let's get beyond that, because what Nazareth is saying is they're not anti-union per se. They want people to make their own decision, and they want everyone to vote. Why are you in favor of a union?
I'm in favor of the union because there's 3 points I'd like to make. The first one is financial. I'm a widow. I'm a single mom, and I can't live on what I make. I teach at 3 separate schools, and I make about $16,000 a year, and I support my family with Social Security. That's my family and I receive Social Security from my deceased husband's his entire work life. So that's what we live on.
I want to make sure I heard it correctly. You said you teach at 3 different schools.
Yes.
And Nazareth is one of them.
Yes.
Okay. And your current income, 3 schools combined, is how much?
It's about $16,000 a year.
16.
Yes.
1-6. Okay.
Yes. And of course, I have a cap on what I can earn set by the government because I received Social Security, which is $15,000. So, of course, for every $2 I make, they take a dollar back, which is across the boards. Nobody should be double dipping. So despite this, despite the fact that I personally could stand to make more money if we unionize, I'm still in this and I'm still doing the work, even though it kind of hurts me financially. I look at what I make at Nazareth and another school that I teach at, I make $20 more per hour. I've talked to a lot of adjuncts. You know, previously I mentioned how I've gone on class visits and I've met, and that's like that's the number one thing that people talk about, how they need to make more money. They need to make more money. They're not compensated for the work they do. In the science department, for instance, lectures are paid more than labs, even though labs are so much more work. And it's just very difficult for people to make a living. So the financial bit is probably the first part. The second part would be job security. We get a contract at the start of every semester, and either you get a contract or you don't. And either you sign the contract or you don't. And there's no telling if you're going to get another one. And I think that Nazareth would say, oh, of course we want you to continue working for us, but there is no guarantee. And you know, people have been promised classes, but then at the last minute, oh, sorry, you know, we need to keep this full-time person full-time, so we're going to give it to them.
What's the last minute when you say, how close to the actual start of classes would you?
Sometimes as a little as a week or two before the start of classes.
You're literally getting ready to teach, and then a week or two out, they say, there will be no teaching.
We're not teaching. Okay. And so, certainly class cancellation fees would be something we would like to discuss. So people at least may get a piece of what they were expecting. They're not going to get the income that they were hoping for, but at least they'll get something. And finally, I guess the overwhelming sense of being second-class citizens. We don't have a say in our departments. Classes can get canceled at the last minute. There's been no direct contact from the president to the adjuncts at large in 10 years. This is the first time he's ever addressed the adjuncts as a whole. He's addressed the faculty as a whole, but never the adjuncts as a whole. This has been brought up in the Faculty Senate. It's been brought up at board meetings, and we've really gotten nowhere. There's been sort of a 10-year stagnant period there when people aren't getting raises.
Is this impacting students?
I believe so. It's when you're struggling to teach at three different schools and my schedule is very inflexible because I have to be in three places. And so I would love to reschedule things when someone gets sick or misses a class or they need more time with me or be able to offer office hours. I'm not able to do that. And it's impacting my students. I can see it impacting my students. And if I were able to be there more, I would love to be present, but I can't do that the way things are right now.
Okay, and what would be an ideal makeup? Should there be adjuncts at all on campuses? If you were running a university, if you were part of the administration, what would the makeup? Because right now, again, it's 3 out of 4 hires these days are not for tenure-track positions. We've been moving in this direction for about 50 years, it looks like. What would a breakdown be that is more ideal?
I think there need to be more full-time positions. But if there can't be, there needs to be more compensation for the work that we do.
Just per credit?
Yeah, I don't really know, honestly. Okay. This is not my area of expertise. I can only talk about my experience as an adjunct.
Okay. All right, and I want to turn to our other guests just for some perspective. And Jake, can you help me with just a couple of quick questions here? Make sure you're right on that mic for me, too. If Nazareth unionizes, how does that then set up for the ranks of adjunct professors? Is it going to be sort of a list of, for lack of a better term, demands to the university, to the college? Will it shake down in a different way, shake out in a different way? What happens sort of like 1, 2, 3 in terms of the steps of priorities and how it's going to happen?
So the first thing that would happen once people vote yes in the upcoming union election is contract surveys would go out. That would give their bargaining committee, which they would elect, it would be made up of their peers, other adjuncts on campus. That would give them a sense of like what to bring to the negotiating table. And really at that point, once we sit down at the negotiating table for the first time ever, adjuncts have a voice in their pay, in their benefits, in the length of their contracts, in all the things that Colleen mentioned. And can sit down at the table on even footing and, have a conversation with the administration about the direction of their profession.
Would benefits ever be on the table in this kind of a case? Or is it more likely pay per credit, that kind of a thing?
Yeah, I mean, in some schools, that is something that, some schools have won health benefits. Some schools, I know, like MCC offers certain benefits to their employees, to their adjuncts. What we actually bring to the table, like I said, is going to depend on what adjuncts, say they need.
Okay. And let me turn to Paul Simonelli, who is an adjunct at MCC, who takes, I think, a different perspective. And part of the reason we wanted someone like Paul here is because we want to understand, at least Nazareth chose not to be on the program with the administration, which we understand. We gave him that opportunity. We want to understand where the opposition comes from. So how do you feel about what you're hearing here, Paul?
Well, I'll start with, let's not just look at schools in a vacuum. You know, look at the building across the street from you, you know, the Kodak building. People used to work there for 35 or 40 years, their entire professional career. Today, people stay at companies 2 to 5 years. They say if you stay any place more than 3 years, you're hurting yourself professionally. So it's changed. In law firms, a lot of the people hired in law firms, everybody hired by a law firm is not going in a partner track. It's just the paradigm has changed on how we do business. Colleges, I think, they need flexibility. The course I teach three sections of the same course because they had the demand for it. There have been times when I've taught one section of that course when there's been no demand for it. I'm just trying to understand and trying to be as sensitive as I can, but understand, when did being an adjunct become a profession? You need people with certain qualifications to teach, but I think the expecting that being an adjunct, it always, and you know, in my mind, seemed to augment, and all the people that I know that are adjuncts do it to augment. And I when I was doing a little background for this, I saw how many people are trying to piece together full-time careers out of it. Well, that might mean you might need to move to Missouri where there's an opening for a full-time professor. I mean, if that's truly what you want to do full-time, then you have to go where the job is to do it. It's a supply and demand thing. And I think adjuncts are overused. I'm not going to deny that. But everybody's working within budgets that they have. And I just don't see a need. And we have, you know, the days of unions, and I know I'll take a lot of heat for this, but there's very, very few professions where I see where unions are necessary. Now we have such strong workplace rules and other ways to protect people that are working that I'm not sure that a union's the solution to it. If anything, it'll just in today's world, I don't know that it's going to do it, but it's supply and demand primarily. If there's a need for the people and there's a lot of people that want those jobs, then the market's going to control what people get paid ultimately.
Yeah, and I think what I think though, when I hear you say, well, when did adjunct become a career? I think it sort of became a de facto career when universities decided over time that instead of 80% of our professors being full-time in the core subjects and maybe a small percentage adjuncts for specialties, or maybe you got a great opportunity to bring in somebody for a credit here and there, when you flipped that on its head, it sort of de facto made it a living whether they can afford it or not. At least that's what it sounds like.
Right. And maybe that's the case. But what we're looking at now is a decline in enrollment in colleges. And so either administrations are stuck with potentially having more professors than they need, and because of tenure and other reasons, they can't let them go, versus being able to flex when there's a demand. There was a lot more students at MCC 5 years ago than there are right now. And whether that number is going to continue to drop or if it's going to level off at some time, I don't know. And from a planning perspective, I don't think it's unreasonable that you try to manage it as you would a business.
And so flexibility is one of the big benefits of having a strong number of adjuncts, you think?
I believe so, sure. I look at, you know, every semester, and I understand what you're saying. I've had times when I've had three classes scheduled and I've taught one, only because that's what the enrollment supported. And there's times when I've taught two that filled up and they opened up a third section because there was a demand for it. So I think the schools have to have that flexibility. They do get, you know, they get us at about, I think, half the price of what it costs for a full-time person. And that makes good business sense to me if you're getting a quality, as long as they're getting the quality product that they need.
You don't mind getting paid half of the rate of professors?
No, I'm not there. I don't have any other. Now, once again, MCC is a little bit unique, but at any university, there's a lot of other requirements for folks. I don't have to do anything. I go, I teach, I take care of my students, I meet with them if I have to, and I leave. I don't have any other requirements that are put upon me, and it gives. And I'm choosing to do it. I choose to teach. I don't do it out of necessity. So maybe that's why my thought on it's a bit different than someone who's doing it out of necessity.
Of course it's going to be different. And what you're talking about and having flexibility, I think that's where Nazareth College used to sit. At least I can talk about my department. It used to be the carrot that the Eastman School of Music would use to get doctoral students to come to Eastman. It was a recruiting thing. They would say, oh yeah, come to Eastman, get your doctoral degree at Eastman, and we'll get you a job at Nazareth College. Doctoral candidates who are amazing players and musicians who have never taught a day in their life. That was the mode of the music department for years. It's changing. And hey, guess what? Our department is bigger and stronger than ever. We have more, the last three classes, the majority have been music majors. That's the work of people like me who may be adjuncts but are acting like full-time people. I recruit constantly. We joke that that's my number one job is recruitment. I don't just go in and teach and leave. It's emailing and talking to prospective students and giving sample lessons and going out and doing the work. That's what makes our department stronger. It makes the college stronger. It's what makes them build a $15 million concert hall because there's a need for it. And so to turn around and say, oh, well, it's just supply and demand. Well, why would you want to continue to hire people just out of school who don't have the credentials that I do, that don't have the teaching experience that I do? Why would you want to do that? It tanks your program.
But I think Paul is right in the sense that, you know, the paradigm has shifted. Like, I think our economy as a whole has moved increasingly towards work that is part-time. Flexible is a word you've been using. I would maybe say expendable. You know, I think since 2008, that's been increasingly the case. Like, I hear a lot of adjuncts refer to their job as an adjunct as a gig. And there's this thing developing that people have started to call the gig economy, where people sort of hop from one incredibly part-time job to another, trying to cobble together something like a living. And the question is if this is the direction that our economy is headed in, if this is the direction that higher education is headed in, do the people who fill those positions deserve a voice at work? And I think they do. There are people at Nazareth College who I've met who are living on food stamps. There are people that I've met who have been there for 25 years and are about to retire, I think that's a generous term, but are about to stop working, and will receive nothing after 25 years of service, except, you know, maybe don't let the door hit you. You know, I think the question is like, do we think that these folks deserve a say over their jobs? And I think they do.
Let me let Paul respond. I want to bring in Pat to the conversation. We've got some phone calls and emails to take, a lot of opinions to share on this, some of what you've heard there. Paul, go ahead. You can respond.
Well, a lot of different things. You know, both folks had things to say. I very simply think that it's a reflection of the rest of society. Very seldom, like I said, do I see a need for a union generally in most businesses these days to accomplish this. And I know people can differ on that. If you want to teach and you want to be a full-time teacher, then you keep trying to find and seek out what you want. You know, you make your destiny. I really believe that. And if you choose to stay in Rochester because this is your home and you have to accept what the market will bear here, if you can't get what you want out of teaching, if you can't make enough money, then maybe you should seek something else. I love teaching. I made a decision. I started college for teaching, and it took until I was in my 50s to actually teach. When I got to a point in my life and my career where I could do that, something that I was passionate about wanting to do, and that was teaching. So it's something I put on the back burner, and I did other things that I enjoyed, and it gave me experience and perspective to make me a better instructor, I believe, than I would have been if I had just spent my whole career teaching. So just because you want to do something, or just because it's what you think you want to do, that might not be what's best for you or your family or anybody else. And I think you have to balance that. Systemically, you know, the use of adjuncts, like I said, I think there are too many of them. But as college enrollment is declining, I don't fault administrations for doing it the way they're doing it.
I think when you say this is the direction society is going in, I think Jake made the same point. I think the difference is you sort of accept that. Jake is saying that there is a societal cost to that. That should not be acceptable, and their work is to try to change that or mitigate the impact of that change. You seem to be saying, so I don't think Jake and Paul are saying different things in terms of the way society is going. Everybody sees that. And I wonder, Colleen, when you hear, you know, Paul talking about, you know, if it's not working for you, you should move or do something else. I mean, have you thought about that?
Why would I do that? I have degrees for I have music degrees from the Harvard of music institutions. I am extremely trained in my craft, and I know what I'm doing.
Well, I'm not.
And
I'm,
I should be. What should I go do? Please tell me what I should do. Should I go back to law school and become an attorney like you? I mean,
no,
I can.
You should do whatever you want to do. It's completely your choice.
There would be no music department because none of us can afford to do this. And are you saying that the arts are not important? That we shouldn't have music education in our schools?
Not at all. Not at all.
But that's what it sounds like.
I'm not talking about you in particular. I'm talking about in general. If someone who's trying to cobble together a full-time full-time job out of adjunct positions, it's not set up to do that. That's all I'm saying. I'm not talking about you in particular. I'm just talking about
folks. Well, sure you are.
Folks.
It's very personal. I just said what I did for a living, and you're just saying, well, go do something else. It becomes very personal when you say that to me. I don't understand how you would expect that I would not react to that.
Well, I wasn't talking to you in particular. I'm talking about a class of people that are trying to turn adjunct teaching into a full-time job. That's all.
Exactly. It's a class situation when I say that those who can afford to teach are the ones who are teaching. Maybe you're just teaching in your job because you can afford to do it. But maybe there's someone like me out there who would be better qualified to teach your class, but they aren't hiring them because they can't afford to do that. So you're the one teaching it because you can afford to teach. And that's a class situation that we're talking about.
Yeah, Colin,
and I think that doesn't come into higher education.
I remember one time you said, you know, you were hired by Nazareth because they thought you were the best person for the job.
Exactly.
And frankly, like, that's what students deserve, are the best people for the job, not the people who can afford to teach there. And if you're committing to go down a road of, like, you know, lower standards of education, then, you know, that's you're certainly welcome to hold that opinion. But, you know, this is very much a part of why adjuncts are organizing, is to preserve the standard of education that people have come to expect at this institution. You know, to sort of piggyback off of what Colleen said earlier, in addition to the way that financials ultimately affect students, you know, not knowing if you're teaching from semester to semester, what impact does that have on students? If a student, especially, you know, music is particularly true in music. If a student attends a particular school to train with a particular music teacher, but that teacher can't actually guarantee that they're going to be there from semester to semester, what impact does that have on a student if they can't actually plan with their professors? What impact does it have if they're not around to give them the extra attention that they need?
I would think relying on, if you go to a school because someone's teaching there as an adjunct on the premise that you're going for that person, I don't think that would be a good use, using sound judgment on that person's part. Adjuncts have been and always will be contract people that there's no guarantee they're going to be there next year. If you go for a tenured professor that's well known in, you know, in violin, and you want you. That's the whole.
But that's the point. There are no tenured professors in violin.
Right.
We are all adjuncts, and most of my students come to Nazareth to study with me. And so, if Nazareth does not renew my contract, you know what happens to them.
Well, then Nazareth will very quickly learn that they're going to lose some students over that.
Right. So perhaps they should do something about that. That's what we're advocating for.
And the market will control. And if Nazareth ends up losing students because they let good people go, people that the, you know, students came or sought, you know, came to that school for, then Nazareth will pay a price for it ultimately. And, you know, they'll either have to change what they're doing or they're not going to survive.
There's another point in this that I think is important, and that is with a collective bargaining relationship, there are certain things that can be negotiated, and they differ from employer to employer, union to union. They're all a little different. Things like adjunct faculty not showing up and preparing a full course to teach 2 days before they're scheduled to teach it, and then the class is canceled. Simply, most of it because of poor management of the enrollment process. So they have done the work and have prepared the class, and now they're not going to get an income. So what we did with our bargaining unit is we actually have money that is paid, certainly not what they would have to teach the class, but at least recognition of the effort they put out. Their work is copywritten, protected, so that an adjunct faculty's work can't be handed over to a full-time faculty member or another part-time faculty member. That's protected. Now, that's not universal, and that certainly is not public law, with copyright law, but it can be negotiated and is in the contract that I work under with Cornell and the contracts that I administer with the SUNY system with UUP. Things like making sure that if somebody is accused of doing something wrong, that there is due process. Again, those are the kind of things that can be built into a contract. A friend of mine that teaches at Geneseo, he was a longtime adjunct, similar to Colleen, who taught at many colleges, and his wife developed a chronic medical condition. He had zero health insurance. He was able to get a position at Geneseo, and his wife and he now have health insurance. He is now a full-time faculty member at Geneseo, one of the leaders in our chapter with UUP there. And it's those kind of things that matter to the individual and matter to the institution. Ultimately, the whole purpose of that is to make sure that the students get the best quality teaching as they can.
All right, I'm going to do something I don't usually do here. We're going to get a break, and then we're coming back to our flooded phone lines. And what we're going to do is ask our listeners to kind of package your comments to about 30 seconds a piece, and we're just going to go down the line, and then we will let our guests respond where they see fit, because we have a lot of feedback coming in as we talk about the ranks of adjunct professors on college campuses. Nazareth College, just one of many, considering unionization, which has already happened around, and I've been saying, Jake, I think about 35 around the country, something like that, but it's several dozen now. We've seen successful movements towards unionization of ranks of adjuncts or part-time teaching staff on college campuses. And so we're having a conversation with some of the folks involved with that. Jake Allen's an organizer for SEIU Faculty Forward at Nazareth College. You just heard Pat Domeratz, who's a labor relations specialist with NYSET and was the regional NYSET organizers for years. You also worked with the Cornell adjunct faculty there and is an adjunct faculty member at Cornell. Colleen Wolfe, an adjunct lecturer in music at Nazareth College. Paul Simonelli, an adjunct professor at MCC. If you are on the phone, we're coming back to you and we're going to move fast after our only break of the hour on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, caring for caregivers. Local faith leaders have stepped up to put together a series of events designed to help people who have become caregivers. People who perhaps didn't think that they would be in this position, but a family member suffered a fall, or there's a quick diagnosis of a fast-progressing illness. We're going to talk about helping caregivers and what they and we all need to know next hour. All right, so listeners, we're going to take a bunch of phone calls, and we're going to try to keep it around 30 to 40 seconds apiece if you can. Kind of keep it tight. I'm going to move through a bunch of calls. You get a good sense for where our listeners are, and then we will have our guest respond. So we'll go down the line. Andrew in Rochester first. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hi. I'm a late-stage PhD student, and I've been an adjunct before, and I'm against unionizing adjunct labor. So adjuncts are temp workers. It's good for graduate students, but if you unionize, you basically solidify the lower paid adjunct position at the expense of universities or colleges hiring full-time or tenure track. So unionizing disincentivizes university administrations to hire full-time. So if you weren't hired on the job market, then the universities don't value you for what you are. They're paying you at a lower price. And remember, I'm saying this knowing full well that I will likely not get a tenure track job. So best thing is don't pull the drawbridge up behind you. Don't unionize. Find another career. And if universities see the value in you, they will hire you full time.
Andrew, thanks for the phone call. Let's get Magesh in Rochester next. Go ahead, Magesh.
Hey, so I'm not a big fan of using the business model at looking at education, but if we're going to do that and we're going to look at our educators and employees, we're asking our educators to subsidize our careers if we're not going to pay them a living wage. And the idea that Nazareth College can't do this is absolutely absurd. The amount of VP and bureaucratic positions that it's created with absorbently high salaries over the last 10 years indicate that they do have the money to pay professors, but that they're choosing to prioritize other things.
All right, Magesh, thank you for that. Let's get Hoover in Pittsford next. Go ahead, Hoover.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I retired as an administrator at a major research university in New York, and my son lives in Florida. He has a PhD. He's been adjunct professor for 15 years, but it doesn't matter because he has his own private practice, and he's a licensed mental health professional, so he does it because he loves it. But the universities are just screwing these the graduate assistants and the adjuncts. And if they don't unionize and get smart, they're just prolonging a situation that needs to be resolved. And the application of funding at the universities has to be reordered to do justice for these people who are doing adjunct work. That's all I have to say today.
Mm. Hoover, thank you, as always, for the phone call. I appreciate that. Patrick in Rochester next. Go ahead, Patrick.
Hey, my father was a tenured professor at a small college for many years. When he retired a few years ago, they didn't replace his position with another tenure-track professor, but with several adjuncts. Despite the fact that they're talented academics, the precarious nature of the work means these adjuncts don't have the office hours.
Patrick, just let me jump in here because I'm losing the connection on the line there. He was calling to say that he says the quality of education is impacted by this. His dad was a tenured professor in Pennsylvania. When he retired, adjuncts took over that position, and the quality of education declined, and Patrick wanted to express his support for the adjuncts. That's according to the pre-call. Let me grab one more quick one, and this is John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Okay, part of the problem is this in general. Colleges need to do a better job of finding a career path leading adjuncts in the full-time jobs. The reason enrollments are down is because the economy is doing better and fewer people are going back to school. People aren't hiring more full-time people because of costs and economics and all this. And adjuncts, to put it politely, and I was an adjunct for 16 years before I got hired full-time, you're a piece of meat.
Wow. That's a strong term. John, thank you for that. Let me read Eric's email. I'm going to take Marcy's call, and then we're going to go to our panel. Eric writes to say, Evan, this topic is tied to health insurance. If there were a true national health insurance for all persons, as in the EU and Canada, adjuncts would have much of the backstop they need in this gig economy. That is from Eric and Marcy in West Bloomfield next. Keep it tight. Go ahead, Marcy.
Hi. So I just want to qualify this quickly. I was an adjunct staff at FLCC for 13 years in the horticulture department. So I understand this, but I'm also an employer. And so I think there's two issues that Colleen is not separating. One is whether the colleges should use adjuncts or not, and that's up to the colleges. They have to figure that out. If their quality goes down, they're going to lose students, and that's going to impact them. But it almost sounds to me as if she feels she is owed a job, that, you know, when the gentleman said, you know, do something else or move or something like that, and she got very insulted. And I understand it's a touchy issue, but everybody has to make choices. And sometimes what you want to do isn't available. And so, yeah, maybe you do have to do something different. So there is a choice to what kind of work you do for most people.
Okay, Marcy, thanks for the phone call. There's a lot to sort through. Colleen, we ended on Marcy's note. I'll start with you. And she's saying it sounds like you think you're owed a job.
That's so far from the truth. I can't even begin to say that. No one's owed a job. I completely agree with her. I just don't think she has any clear understanding of what I do or what a lot of the adjuncts at the college do. If any of us decided, oh, well, I guess I'll just go do something else, there would be no, we're 2/3 of the entire Nazareth faculty. Nazareth would be left with 160 full-time folks to cover every subject. There's not enough time in the universe for them to teach all of those courses. You're talking about replacing 370 people. No one's owed a job, but what I'm saying is that what I do is extremely specialized. Somebody has to do it. And what I'm saying is that it should be someone like me who has the training, who has the education, who has the years of teaching experience, rather than a recent college grad who's barely older than any of the students that they're teaching with no teaching experience. I'm teaching the future band directors and music educators of America. That's what I'm doing for a living. Are we saying that that's not an important, that it sounds like I should just go work at Starbucks or go work for Wegmans? Is that what I should do? Okay, then we won't have music education. We will not have high standards in our public schools. And I don't think anybody wants that. But at the same time, I'm owed a job? No, I don't think so. I'm not owed this job. It's a job that I do with pleasure, and I am I love my job, and I can't even imagine not doing it, which is why I stay and continue to work overtime doing the job as it needs to be done, despite the fact that I'm not compensated for the work that I do.
All right, the caller's offered a lot of different things. I just want to ask Paul if you thought Marcy reflected your points of view there, because she kind of referred back to some of what you said. Anything you want to add there, Paul?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Teresa writes to the program and says, this is why I didn't get my PhD, for fear I would never have a real career being a professor, so I stopped at my undergrad. I would have loved to teach, but I couldn't afford the loans and the risk of having no career. That's from Teresa in Webster. So the impact of the move towards growing ranks of adjuncts. Pat, you heard a lot from our callers there. What grabbed you the most there?
Yeah, I think there were a couple things. I think this notion that there's a lack of flexibility for the employer just isn't there. What we want to make sure is that when a contingent adjunct faculty member is hired, that they have a full expectation of what the job will entail, that there is an evaluation to make sure that they're on track heading forward, that there's opportunities for professional development, which many times at most colleges there is not, that they have the ability to become a larger part of the college community. Now, some of that is focused around time because a lot of the meetings and other structure of the college is during the day, and much teaching by adjunct faculty is in the evening. To make sure that they have professional area where they can meet with students in private rather than, you know, loading up the back seat of their car with textbooks and papers, sort of literally the drive-by faculty member that too many of us are. And just to make sure that we are a respected part of the campus community that at times includes benefits where that is desired and appropriate and negotiated between the parties. The notion that the increased hiring is decreasing the amount of full-time faculty is true, but that's a choice by the institution, and it's a tactic by the institution. And statistics bear this out since the early 1970s, when the growth of part-time faculty, and not just part-time faculty, contingent faculty. So that's full-time faculty that are in non-tenured lines, that are in qualified academic rank lines, that may teach 20, 25 years and never obtain job security, tenure. They're every 2 or 3 years, depending on how long their term appointment is, they're up for renewal. So it's a continual state of a lack of job security. And that's simply no way to live. The normalization of the gig economy is a problem because employers are big winners, and the people who work in the gig economy, for the most part, are big losers because of the wage that they're paid, the low wage that they're paid, and the lack of any kind of structural security built into the job.
Yeah, and this is where I heard Paul earlier. You said, well, we used to have Kodak out the window, and, you know, people would do that their whole lives, Paul, and now people are, you know, doing different things every 3 or 5 years. I don't hear Pat embracing that. I hear Pat saying, look, we have to deal with that in a way that has very deleterious effects on families, stability, et cetera, and that we've got to deal with that in some way. And this is one of the ways they're trying to deal with it.
And it's a reflection of the entire working world. It's just not academic. When I hear you say that people get 3 to 5 or, you know, 1 to 3 or 5 year contracts and they have no job security, that's pretty good to have a 5 year contract or a 3 year contract. There's no guarantee that you, once you get a job, that you should have it forever. I don't, if you've spent 10 years there or 15 years there, that's just the nature of the beast. It doesn't go along with the way the rest of the world's working today. You may not like it, but I don't see that that's any different than what's happening on the outside, out in the marketplace. So, and the cream usually rises to the top. And there's people that succeed in today's world and do very well. And is it easy? Nothing's easy. So I'm just not sure the premise of expecting that you're going to have some guarantee of work going into the future, no matter what the company or the school needs.
Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. And here's why this matters, though. And I understand what you're saying. I think that why it matters and why it's different is my wife worked for Xerox for 20 years, just over 20 years. And all of her friends, many of them were Xerox employees, and they were simply terrorized at, am I going to get a package, a buyout package? Am I going to be invited not to show up to work? And that lack of job security reflected in their buying habits. So now it's now affecting my neighborhood. It's affecting my town, my community, my county. when you have that type of, and it's not universal job security, it's just saying that we have an appointment for you for multi-years. That doesn't always happen, and in most cases doesn't happen with adjunct faculty. For me as an adjunct, I'm appointed for each time the course is offered. But in generally, especially for contingent full-time labor for faculty, in order to have a quality education program, there needs to be consistency that is integrated with the rest of the department. When there is disruption in that, is that there's continuous turnover, you end up at the last minute, and this is part of the problem, with scrambling to get adjunct faculty members to plug a hole. Well, your students are still paying the same rate. So what we should all be striving for, and I think the faculty at Nazareth certainly is to trying to make sure that there's the highest quality faculty by making sure they have a voice in the process. And their vote hopefully will give them that.
Our work environment is our students' learning environment. That's the key. What, I mean, do your children, would you want to send them to university where there was constant turnover by people who had no teaching experience? No, you wouldn't do that. You're looking at what's the best college, what's the best educational experience my money can buy for my child. That's what people are looking for.
On that subject, let me read an email. I just got one of exactly that. But and here's one before we lose the hour also. I don't want to miss this point that Tony just made. Tony says on Twitter, I adjuncted RIT. I did the math once. My hours in class plus prep time plus grading plus emails divided by pay came out to about $4.50 per hour. No one has addressed that yet, not to mention having no benefits. Paul actually did. Paul said he doesn't mind getting paid half of what full-time tenure-track professors make. And I'm not being flip. I mean, Paul addressed the fact that he thinks that the market says this is how it works. He accepts that. He adjuncts at MCC. Connie writes this and says, Evan, adjuncts are fine teachers, but they don't really provide all the facets of full-time faculty, like long-term contact for future references, longer office hours, and serving on institutional committees. I wish students would pay attention to the part-time versus full-time ratio when they choose a school, especially with the high cost of private higher ed. I worked in higher ed for 30 years at MCC, RIT, and the University of California, Davis, so I do have some experience there. What do you make of that?
I think she's exactly right. I mean, it's something that people have to, I would look for that for my children. I would want to know, I would want my students, my children to be taught by faculty who have amazing credentials, who are full-time, who are there on campus, who are available to them to give them extra help if they need it, who are engaged. And that's not to say the adjuncts are not engaged. I mean, I give my all to my job. I give my everything to my job. And it's just not knowing what's happening next. That affects students' education. They have to have long-term contact with their students. You know, they have to have long-term contact with the faculty they work with.
Yeah,
they need letters of recommendation. They need to be able to go back and say, hey, I'm having trouble with this. Can you help me with this?
And I've had that happen personally with letters of recommendation for master's programs, references for future employment, you know, those kind of connections that when I'm with students, it's not, well, it's the end of the semester, see ya. You know, I still have relationships and follow students through their career, those that want to maintain contact. So that's regardless of how much I teach. It has to do with the professionalism that I have in what I do.
Are you able to do that as an adjunct yourself?
I do it. In fact, I had a student sitting in my office a week ago that I had 4 years ago, and he's finishing up at RIT right now, and he's got a job with the Defense Intelligence Agency. And he came back, and he's used me on numerous times for recommendations and references as he's worked through this process to get a job. I just want to say one other thing, just to give you a comparison here. One of the schools in this country that's rated in the top five every single year, colleges, is United States Military Academy at West Point. I will tell you that the department chairmen's are permanent positions, but most of the faculty there rotate in on three-year assignments.
Is that apples to apples, though, you think?
Well, maybe not, but what I'm saying is, and I understand what you're talking about, continuity and other things, but what I'm one of the top universities in the country, one of the best engineering schools every year in this country, and the faculty, a majority of the faculty, rotate in and out every 3 years or so. And there's a complete turnover of faculty other than department heads over a period of 5 or 6 years. Entire departments turn over continuously. So it can be done. You're right. The military has more control over its people, their education. and other things, and they built a system that works that way. So that in and of itself, that there's a turnover, and I keep hearing one other thing saying that, do you want some person who has no experience teaching? Well, someone's got to teach somewhere the first time somehow. And the first time I taught at MCC was the first time I taught, and now I taught in the Army before, but that was the first time. Someone had to give me a break and let me teach the first time.
Okay, I take the point there, and we're down to our last seconds. Jake, you want to weigh in? Got to do it quick, and then let us know, when's Nazareth going to make this decision? Because we've heard the debate this hour.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Paul, I think it's really interesting that you brought up 3-year assignments. Because that would be 6 times longer than the current length of the contracts at Nazareth College, which are semester to semester. The vote is going to be taking place. Ballots come out this Friday. That's May 18th. They should be in people's mailboxes by Monday. So we're encouraging folks to vote yes and vote early.
All right, so a lot of feedback. I mean, I could just sit here the rest of the day and read your emails and tweets and perspective from a lot of different positions on this, but I want to thank our guests for at least airing out the conversation, and now you leave the hour with the full picture on where people are and why. And that was Jake Allen, organizer for SEIU Faculty Forward at Nazareth College. Thanks for being here, Jake.
Thanks for having us.
Paul Simonelli from Simonelli & Simonelli, who teaches at MCC as an adjunct. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Colleen Wolf, an adjunct lecturer in music at Nazareth College. Colleen, thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
And Pat Domeratz, a labor relations specialist with NICET and involved heavily with efforts where he has been an adjunct at Cornell. Thank you, Pat, as always.
Good. My pleasure.
Once again, we did reach out to Nazareth College, and we'll post their statement online if you want to read it in full. And we'll let you know, as time goes on, what happens there. More connections coming up.